I charged it for. Oops.
All right, it is November 11th again, and we are here at Pope Michael's Church. And we are starting the interview, and I just want to say that we do plan on making this a public record, mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that's okay with you.
That's
we
fine.
Plan on putting it up. And
that's fine.
All right.
Go for it.
Yeah, so I guess maybe just introduce yourself. Tell us where you're from.
Okay. My name is Phil Friedel. I'm 22. I came from Illinois. I was in college for 2 years for mechanical engineering. I left college because I always thought I was called to the priesthood, and then it's a really long story, but I'm really trying to shorten it. There was essentially what I wanted to do and what God wanted me to do. God wanted me to be a priest. I wanted to live my life per se. That kind of, and my parents guided me and wanted me to become a engineer, and I kind of went with it, and I just kind of, thought it was really cool. I always loved math, so I continued on throughout high school and all that. And eventually, I finally failed 2 mechanical engineering classes, I think my second year. And so I just started thinking, like, is this what I really want to do? Because I don't want to waste, 4 or 5 years and not find out this is not what I want. So that's essentially, I decided after my 4 semesters, like, this is not what I want to do. So then at that time, I was looking on YouTube, and I found a 1941 Easter Mass that was held in Chicago. I watched it, and I said, this is not the same as what I grew up with, because I grew up in the Novus Ordo Church my whole life. So I thought this is much more reverent. It's in Latin. You see everything, what they did back in those days, and it was just jaw-dropping for me. And I always, especially in college, I started going to Mass more. I try to go every day, but I always had a busy schedule. So I watched that, and I just, for 2 hours, I think it was like a nice long Mass, and I saw, like, this is what we need to be, I did a lot of research, and I found out that Benedict wasn't holding the right holding the right doctrine, and so I spent a lot of money on books. I don't know if you heard of the publisher, Tan Books in Illinois. I think they moved to, like, Virginia or something now. But in any case, I bought a lot of books, a lot of Catholic books, did a lot of research. And so I saw a trend, as Pope Michael was talking about, traditionalism. And so I was indirectly in it, vaguely. I just kind of identified myself as a traditionalist, I think, for a month or two. And I realized that was wrong when I found his site. And I think the key word I got into his website was traditionalism. And the first line was that it was, traditionalism is seeking a solution outside the papacy. And it completely summed up everything that was wrong with it. Because during the meantime, I was thinking about either going to a monastery, a traditionalist Catholic monastery, or traditionalist Catholic priesthood. And so I saw that there was a lot of, I didn't see the infighting per se, I saw a lot of separation, because I was trying to find what is wrong, why aren't these people united, because the church is always united. And so as soon as I found that there's no pope, I said, we have to find a pope, we have to do something, we have to get a pope. And eventually I found Pope Michael, I bought the book, I did all the research, I read it once thoroughly, right off the bat, and then I just kept studying. And so I came to a moral conviction that he was the Pope, and then, I sent in my email saying that, this is my life story, this is, kind of what happened, this is why I think I'm called to the priesthood, and I went on, and we just kind of talked about it. And then at that time, too, there's another person, I don't know if you've known, there's Teresa Benz, who also helped with the election and the co-writing of the book, Will the Catholic Church Survive the 20th mm-hmm. Century? And so she was putting out propositions that Pope Michael wasn't the Pope, and so I was very confused, because I was just getting into, is Pope Michael the Pope or not? And so after doing a lot of the research, I started writing, I started from my understanding, my moral conviction, why Pope Michael is the Pope, and I started doing it through church history and through biblical proof. And I tried to summarize, not really summarize, but kind of gel them in together, and why these two parts, these two proofs, the biblical history and the church history, would prove Pope Michael. And then that's essentially what eventually came out to be this document. I wrote a rough draft and I sent it in to Pope Michael, and then he liked it. Because, you know, I dove in the church history and all that other stuff, and I always loved history. But in any case, I addressed many of the errors that she was pointing out, and that made my moral conviction. And then this one, it's a lot thicker book. My first draft was like just 20 pages or something real small, just a kind of rough draft. And I understood it. I saw from the beginning, you can see this slow, it's called the lack of charity in the Bible. And so when the sins have grown many, the lack of charity, which charity, as theologians define it, is divine love. When divine love has slowly withered away, it's because of sins. And you can just see the slowly whining of divine love of just Catholics in general about the faith. And so when you get up to 1950s and you see, you know, all the anti-popes and Vatican II, you can just see, bam, for me it was just a night and day difference. And I saw what was wrong, just Catholics were not fervorish about their faith, and they just didn't care. And it was disheartening in a certain fashion. You know, you find all this stuff out, but, you know, you always put hope in a situation that, you know, there's people that would come around. And so, after the... If I'm getting off topic, please let me know.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Fine.
Yeah. Because that's what happened with Adam, the documentary filmmaker. I just talk and I just... Am I even on topic anymore? Okay.
Right.
Okay. So, after writing this, and when I finally came here in Kansas to the seminary, I started doing research more on this. I kind of put it together. You know, I asked them, do you think I should continue on? I said, yeah, I think you should. So we started doing... I think in total it took me about a year and a half to write. That's with the research and the writing, but mainly the writing took only a few months. After the writing, I sent it to Father Dismas, which is, he's talking to some bishops right now, and he really enjoyed it. So it's not just me who just likes it. So, and of course, the Pope's mother liked it. You know, the Pope liked it himself. And so it's nice to see that kind of reaction. It's just not, you know, it's just not my really, you know, fine point. It's kind of a general church history of what happened from, I think I started during the 16th century, and I just brought it forward. And I proved biblically and with church history why Pope Michael is the Pope. And I explain, I try not to go too much into theological proofs and stuff, because I want it to be more of a church history. So it's real nice and simple for people to read, and that's what I hope to gain out of it for other people, for their education. So,
could you just tell us, give us some time frame, like what year did you find Pope Michael just online, and then what year did you end up here?
Okay.
And I how did you end up here, too?
The how is always interesting.
That's a good question.
Very good, good. Back in 2007, that was the spring of 2007, that was my last semester. After I failed my two engineering classes, right, I think in January, February 2007, I kind of, not really moseyed around, but I just kind of, I didn't really go to classes. I just started, you know, doing a lot of research on what I want to do with my life. And then after I found out that, you know, I wanted to be morally convicted of it. And that's when I found the YouTube about the Latin Mass, which is called the Trinity Mass. I found that shortly in, I think, March, and then after that was kind of just wow. I had to grasp this wow part. So after the wow, because I realized that I lived in error my whole life, I started doing research, and I think it was in the summer of that year, almost early fall, when I found Pope Michael. And then after that, I left in October. You know, after I waited almost a whole year, I think it was, because I left in 2008 of October. I'm trying to get my dates right. So October is when I found him, and then I think a year 2007, 2008. So yeah, practically a year went by, and I went and I got a job, you know, so I can buy more books, mainly. After buying more books, then, because my parents were resistant to the idea of, firstly, they didn't want me, indirectly not wanting me to become a priest, because, you know, obviously, parents want grandchildren and all that other stuff, so they always want, no, we don't want you to do that, kind of that. So, they never really said it, you know, straight out, but it was kind of, you just knew it. So, after that, after I decided all that, we went to the Novus Ordo priest and all that stuff. I think we went to one, and we just had several discussions with other people in general. It wasn't too deep because they never dove into it. They never, you know, asked why or that kind of stuff. But we did have a few discussions, and seeing that I was not being the old Phil per se compared to what I am now, you know, being a Christian and Catholic, they didn't, I don't know if they didn't like it or they didn't want to accept it right away. So after that, on the day that I was leaving, my whole family came up not wanting me to go. No, they did not want me to go. They followed me everywhere I was going. I went to the library to check email, they followed me there. So that on the day that I was leaving, the Pope and I joke about this all the time, but day that I was leaving, my whole family was there. My mother was crying, and I was like, you know, you're going to see me at Christmas. You know, it's not the end of the world. But they were thinking thoughts I don't understand. But anyways, I was leaving, very silent except my mother. And after I got into the car, I packed up my bag, or my stuff, because I had lots of books with me. I packed up all my stuff by myself, because my father was not the happiest person I is. He was very silent. He was like, he just didn't want the Pope to take me to Kansas. And so, after seeing all this resistance, you know, kind of climb up to that one moment, I was at peace with myself. I was probably the happiest person there. I think after that, I was probably the Pope or something. But, I was so completely at peace with myself. I was so happy, and I didn't understand on a certain point, you know, I was happy, and they were just completely sad, and so I hope one day to kind of, you know, talk to them about it. Like, why are you guys so upset? So, but in any case, after we got into the car and we're driving down the road, seeing all that resistance, the Pope asked me this question I'll never forget. He says, are you doing this out of free will? And I says, are you nuts? I wanted to say, are you nuts? Seeing, because my father was standing, you know, let's say right here. The Pope was standing right here on a public street. My dad was like this to the Pope, you know, just silent, just completely. And I wanted to ask him, are you nuts, Pope? It's like, you just, I didn't say that, but, you know, I just went, okay. And so I said, yeah, I'm doing this out of free will. I was like, come on. So I joked to myself about that all the time. That I'll never forget that. But in any case, what's the question again? Have I missed it?
Yeah, I was okay, how you ended up okay. here.
And so we're driving down, and then we stopped in a motel for a night, and then we came back the next day, and that's when we got here. And then what else do you want
to
know?
Did he come up to get you, or did
you? Yeah, actually, he went to Indiana to visit someone else. I can't remember who. And then he, on that one same trip, he kind of came into Illinois, went from Indiana to Illinois, and then the next day, because he stayed one day with them, and then, or in a motel, one of the two, and then he the next day came and picked me up, and then we drove down halfway, let's say.
Yeah.
Well, got a motel the next day, came back. So.
So I mean, what was it like once you got here? I mean, was there? What?
My brother before I left, he called or something, you know, something got up and I was on the phone with him, and he says, are you scared about being the first one there? I was like, no, why would I be scared? So, it was interesting because during the whole time, I just didn't know what to expect, but I didn't even think about it. It's just, well, this is probably going to be a house and, you know, something else. And when I got on these dirt roads, it was interesting because I'm used to paved roads, you know, asphalt, the whole nine, and this and there, bumping up and down. So, getting out in the country is real nice. I really loved it. Just because there's a creek, you know, about a mile west of here, and it's just so peaceful, and it's almost like I don't say a monastery in a certain sense, but we're so detached in a certain sense from the world and just from locality of people. There's so many or so few people in this area because it's the country, and it's so peaceful, it's so nice. And in that respect, I loved it a lot, because then you can really sit down and focus, because, you know, if there's restaurants or movie theaters, like, you know, let's go there, you know. You always have that temptation to just enjoy yourself and not really do anything. When I came here, it was really good that we sat down right away and we got down to business. You know, what did you study? What books do you have? And then he always jokes about it. I brought a lot of shredded wheat and stuff because my parents just don't eat that stuff. So I thought, well, why waste it? So I brought it with me. And so he always jokes because I left books at home. So why didn't you bring the books? And he always rats on me, you know, jokingly. He's like, so I keep asking my mom, you know, send me my books, whatever. And she's like, no, you got them all. I'm like, well, you know, when I'm going to go home for Christmas, I'm going to go look. But that one was funny. When I got here, you always have that excitement, that energy, wanting to find a bishop to help restore the sacraments, the faith, and that is not an easy task, because people are in a certain extent indifferent. You have those people, and then you have people that just don't believe you, and so it's a long process in that regard. So you learn a lot of patience. But other than that, I mainly just do a lot of studying here. And this wasn't my intention, writing a book, but I did do it. So after that, and then Eli, he's another Catholic seminarian. Mm-hmm. He stopped by a couple times, I think 2 or 3 times, but he stayed one long session before this last one. It was, I think, 4 or 5 months, but it was a good stretch of time. Got to bond, you know, like brothers, you know, so it's really nice to have someone more my age, you know, even though I think he's a few years older than me. Or just knowing someone else on that same level, it's like, you know, he understands exactly what I'm going through, because his parents resent what my parents did too. So when I got here, let's see.
Do you feel like it changed the atmosphere around here, having another person here?
It did change. Well, obviously, cooking. I never cooked it for myself, so in that regard, I had to start learning how to cook. And so I made some interesting meals. I had some good, some bad, some indifferent. I'm still working on the cooking part, so that's the main part, is just trying to chip in. And so cooking's not the easiest thing for me, I guess. I don't know, maybe it's not one of my strong suits, unless it's grilled cheese and, you know, tomato soup.
Exactly. Always good.
Yeah. So yeah, just doing more of the country stuff, you know, picking up firewood, you know, cutting stuff, you know, pulling, you know, weeds that are taller than you out of the ground. So that round of, that stuff is always fun. We're thinking about bringing back some chickens, because they had a chicken coop, or they call it the chicken mansion, because there's a lot of chickens in. So that kind of stuff, that's very fun. We have a pretty big garden, I think 50 by 50 feet, so it's a lot of physical labor. In the summer, in the winter, we have to kill a lot of trees, because it threatens the water line. Oh. So it's just simple, mainly chores and that kind of stuff, so It's a little bit different from when I, you know, did it back home, you know, clean bathroom, vacuum, that kind of stuff. So I do a lot of the same stuff here, too, so just everyday, normal stuff.
And you've been here how long?
I've been here, this is going to be my second year.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think was the hardest thing to adjust to when you got here?
Food. For me, it wasn't hard. I think food would be the hardest thing.
Really?
Yeah, it was not hard for me. I don't know why. It was just like that. So that's probably a blessing in disguise that I probably don't know that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
So you kind of touched briefly on it, but I wonder if you could maybe go into more detail on the interactions that the church has with people from outside who are either on your side or aren't. Because you mentioned a little bit how that, you know, requires a lot of patience. So I was just wondering if maybe you could talk about that a little bit more.
I'm just trying to find a good answer. Say that question again. I have to think about it.
What has your interaction been with people outside of your church?
Actually, we've had a couple physical times speaking in presentations. I think, was it one? Is it a second time out? Yeah, it'd be our second time presenting at Kansas University. Mm-hmm. It's actually really positive. And that's what I'm glad about, is that people are not so... I mean, obviously, you're going to have those people that think you're just nuts. My parents are probably one of them. They're just going to say, you're nuts. I'm like, okay. I can't argue that, because that's just, you know, a plain accusation. But it's always exciting when you see those people in the crowd just kind of, whoa. You know, I never thought about that before. But it's mainly... really, really easy. People are not that resentful that I've, you know, I think the first time we went, we had those few, you know, people that just did not like us. Whatever we said, they tried to find something. That was very interesting. But the second time, people were taking pictures with us and, you know, just being very cordial, very nice. And so that was, very easy to live with, you know, compared to the other, you know, we hate you kind of thing. Yeah. When we went to Iowa, it was a real nice setup there too. We were in a classroom, you know, about 10-15 people, and they were all real nice. You know, professor kind of, when it was kind of lowing down a little bit, he'd throw in a question he was thinking of, so it kept a good pace. You know, people were always asking questions, which is good. And so it was kind of just more of a interested curiosity kind of whenever we go out, you know, in garage sales, we always, you know, talk to people, and if they, you know, they just, actually, a guy in Walmart, I think he was 56 years old, and he said, this is the first time I've seen a man in a cassock for X amount of years, and it's blowing away, because just, you know, you're walking, and all of a sudden, he just stands there and looks at you, it's like, I'm not an alien, I'm not, you know, a green little guy, no, nothing like that, and so, and he shakes our hands, and, you know. And so, so you have those kind of types of reactions too, where just people look at it like, wow, it's just, and so a lot of that is lost in today too, is that people don't realize what we have lost, all the treasures in the church, whether physical or spiritual. And so just even a simple cassock, the Pope was explaining, he was reading one day that one of the saints, you know, was talking to his fellow, priests that were walking through a town, and he says, we're going to be preaching. And all they did was walk, and one of the other priests says, well, what are we, you know, aren't we going to preach? They said, no, we preached. It was silent. And so that's essentially what we're doing. Just by our physical presence, we're preaching, you know. Just by the cassock itself, it talks about the vow of chastity and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of hidden preaching going on as well without us even saying a word. So that's kind of a nice thing of itself. You know, you don't have to say a lot of words to really bring something home. And so...
So, what has... I mean, can you tell us a little bit about some of your interactions with members of the congregation?
Mainly, I had a physical interaction with Eli, other than Pope and the Pope's mother. I've had interaction with Lucio, who's in India, obviously only by email, but with Eli, you know, we were just best buds. It's like long last buds. You never saw each other before, but real easy friendship. You know, he'd always ask me deep theological questions. It's like, I have no one else to talk to. And this is like, you know, I don't think of, you know, because some of these questions were just, what would heaven be like if this, this, and this? It's like, man, I do not think of that. So I'm just trying to get to heaven. So you have that kind of camaraderie going around too, asking those deep questions like that, and that's always nice to see that kind of spark that interest in the faith as well. And so he's very supportive of what we're doing. You know, he's so supportive that, you know, there was a possible bishop in Africa. He's like, I want to go to Africa. He's like, wait a second, you know, we got to check him out. He's like, well, hold on a second. So, you know, after a while, they weren't, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, it didn't work out. So he's, that excitement is always exciting. What else? And, yeah, when he was always here in the summer, because it was during the summer, and so we played wiffle ball out there, playing around. So it's just, it's kind of that innocent fun that a lot of people miss these days, and what you don't normally do. And so that one was fun. And then during, when he was here, we had classes at 8, you know, in the morning. So it was kind of, when you get more people, you kind of have to make a more formal schedule. And so that's one thing I did notice when he had come, you know, more classes, you know, learning Latin, this, and this. And so that, you knew you're coming down to real business when that was working around. And then, and two, in a certain sense, I'm seeing my future. And so when you look at all these vows, and I go, whoa, I'm making a vow. And it hits you sometimes, for me. When I made that vow, I was like, I made a vow to God about, you know, chastity or about obedience or about whatever. And so seeing the seriousness of it, it blows me away. It's just, it almost is scary in a certain sense, but it's just, it's not, I don't want to say scary, but it's definitely, it'll make your mind think. And so when he came here, it was good because that road of restoration is slowly coming about. And so he'd always ask me about, you know, what's going to happen in the future, you know, this kind of stuff. And, you know, we're talking about possibly, you know, economic collapse in the United States because of monetary problems and all that other stuff. So you have a lot of political issues he's talking about too. And so we both kind of came on the same road, somewhat similar. And so you kind of bounce off ideas like, well, I think, you know, the economy's going to collapse and this will bring about this, and this, or that kind of standpoint. I hope I'm answering your question.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Say the question. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, does Eli plan on coming back? I remember he came to the lecture I was at last year.
He hasn't made it clear, but part of the problem is that he doesn't know.
If you don't want to answer,
no. I'm trying to find the right answer. Mm-hmm. I'd have to say yes, but he's kind of just like, he kind of got stuck for a second. He's just kind of, as the Pope Mother said, you know, he's kind of in a tub of butter. You know, you're just kind of used to the family atmosphere, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So he's kind of wrapped up into that. But he's wanting to come back, and it's not like he's out. He hasn't formally said anything to me, but he's definitely going to come back whenever he wants to. He's studying at home, too, so as far as I know. So, yeah.
So what's it like working with Pope Michael?
Great. It's a blast. I guess the main thing is that when you get emails in from people, you know, sometimes they're just off the wall, and we just joke about something. And he's like, man, what do these people think, you know? And so with that aspect, we enjoyed a lot of the same things like math and, you know, games and stuff. And so it's just very cordial country living. I don't know if you guys, where you guys are from or anything, but for me, I was more in a suburban area, more the city life. And so coming out in the country, just talking slow, talking funny, you know, that kind of stuff. It was the funniest thing because I went to Habitat for Humanity for 2 years. And the funny... All the guys, not all the guys, but my best friends in the group, we'd go talk to the country girl and just listen to how they talk. We'd say a word, and they'd laugh. We'd say a word, and they'd laugh. And so we'd go back and forth. So when you go to that country style, it's a different atmosphere. It's slower. Sometimes it can be slow, but mainly we're going all the time, either for questions or anything. Because there are a lot of people that do send in serious questions, either about theology or about what we're doing, or how I came to my solution, or just people, you know, saying, well, you're wrong because this and this and this, and so you spend, you know, all day, you know, trying to figure, well, no, look at this, look at this, look at this. And so there's a lot of answering questions, mainly, always trying to find a bishop, but that's kind of out of our hands because Dismas is working up in the northwest area. So we're always working toward a goal, which is the restoration of the church. Now, along the way, we're going to have fun. You know, we're going to play card games. We're going to just enjoy my bad cooking sometimes. Or at least, you know, pour some Tabasco sauce to hide the flavor, you know. That kind of stuff. So, not to have fun along this road is to miss out on life. And you don't want to miss out on innocent fun. And so, if you're not having fun, then why are you doing it? So, but, yeah, it's just, of course, the Pope explained what we do every day normally, so I'm not a real Jeopardy fan, but when it comes I have to admit, I'm not a real Jeopardy fan. Those two really get into it, but I'm just like, man. I mean, if it's my selection, he's like, you know, anything in German or something, you know, where it's more my generation, like, yeah, I think I got an answer. I'll shout out an answer, so. Yeah, Jeopardy's not my thing. I don't know why.
What is your relationship like with Pope Michael? Like, do you see him more as a friend or like a mentor or a teacher?
Well, the obvious answer is I see him as the Pope. But obviously, I never really thought of it. I mean, you have that, on certain levels, you have him as a friend, mm-hmm. You know. Because you talk about personal issues, like, yeah, my mom says this and this and this. What the heck do I say to her about mm-hmm. that? So you have that friend issue, and then you're going to have that kind of superior issue, because, you know, he is the Pope. I'm just a seminarian, you know, eventually a priest. And so you have that superior level. And when you get into doctrinal issues, you always ask him, like, hey, what do you think? And so most of the time it's on that kind of friendship level, because you're not always being serious all the time. So I see more of him as a friend, but when it comes down to the serious matters, when it comes down to, you know, talking about bishops and all stuff, I say, hey, Pope, what do you think? So it's more of a cordial kind of a relationship.
So now that you've written your book, I mean, do you have any particular things that you're wanting to, like, specifically focus on in your studies? Or?
That's part of, in restoring the seminaries, what do we want to bring back, or what can we bring back? And one of them that I wanted to particularly do was, not say get a doctorate in church history, but bring back the church history section. But there, on the Annunciation website, you know, we talk about all the specific emphasis you can go into. And church history is one of my favorites, personally, because it just ties in everything with what's going on today and what happened back then, because when you get with church history, you get all the lives of the saints and stuff, and so you get into just more of that everyday stuff, how they lived their lives. With this book, I just haven't had the time to per se promote it, because I was thinking about, you know, donating to libraries, you know, because if people want to read it.
Could you tell us the name of your book?
The name of the book is History of the Church, The Formation of the Apostles of the Latter Times, and the Pope always joked about the title, because it's one of those 19th century or 18th century titles where it's so long, you might as well just write a paragraph or, you know, two sentences with it. And it's funny, when you go back to St. Alphonsus, you know, some of his, you know, titles are so long, it's like, man, So, yes?
I just let go of the Pope. He's lost again. I didn't mean to interrupt him.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about
it. It's getting late. I made a big pot of chili if y'all want a bowl of chili when you get finished.
If you guys get hungry, no. That's fine. No.
I'm fine with whatever.
I just want to make sure I answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, did you have more to add to that?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Okay. Well, so how do you see the future of the church over the long haul?
Well, obviously, you're going to have a serious problem with the United States, because there's two problems here. There's the monetary problem and also the social problem. You have a social corruption, which is far surpassed the Roman Empire. I talk about that in here in my book, how bad it was morally, Just people would not work. You have that issue. You have people living immoral lives and that part. And so I kind of show that parallel, I guess. And there needs to, just like the Roman Empire, after the Roman Empire fell, that's when Christendom finally came about. That's, per se, the historians say the Dark Ages of the Church. That's more in the worldly sense. But during that time, that's when the Church really aspired. That's when a lot of great saints came out, too. And so that's the same thing with what's happening now. The world has been just corrupt in general. And so having that corruption, it's going to fall because it cannot last the way it is. Because when you spend, specifically America, when you spend beyond your means, when you spend more money than what you take, you're just going to go in debt. And that's what's essentially what happened. And so after when the United States fall, I have to say no more than, it's not going to take more than 5 years, in my opinion, no more than 5 or 10 years that the United States will fall. After that, then there's going to be a slow process in restoring the church and society as well. And so how that comes about is going to be pretty interesting. I personally told the Pope, I think beforehand, I said, whenever before it's going to fall, I think you're going to be consecrated, because it's easier. God is allowing us to be able to be in contact with all these, you know, bishops and priests and stuff now, because it's a lot simpler. And that's what happened during the Roman Empire. When the gospel was preached, the Roman Empire was at its utmost power, but also there was the roads. You have the roads and the seas, and that made spreading Christianity really easy and really quickly. And so that's what's happening now. We're not really spreading Christianity as quickly, but we're getting our message out to bishops and priests, telling them, you know, join the church, and this is why you need to. This is why we're the church. And so when we get a bishop and consecrate the Pope, that's when I think things will definitely shake up. And it is, in a certain sense, scary, because when you have all these people that do not know even the basics of how to grow a garden and stuff, is how are they going to live? And so there might be a lot of immoral actions. You know, you might see murders. I mean, who knows what will happen? And so it was interesting. I was reading in history, too, that the Roman Empire was so oppressive in taxes that the people prayed to God that this to send the barbarians, because it was so bad. And so and so you kind of wonder when it's just gonna collapse. And so I'd say, you know, that society is gonna collapse within 5 to 10 years, because personally, looking at the monetary problems, you can't spend all that money and not have problems. So that's always a serious thing to think about. So yeah, I think that's what's going to cause the world to essentially collapse, because the world has the U.S. dollar as its current reserve, and so the world is essentially invested in our problem, and that's not good for the world. So that'll definitely cause a world conversion if the world collapses. So.
When will communion be able to, and like Mass, be able to be part of the church again?
Well, you have two types of communion. You have spiritual communion, which is essentially a prayer, and also you have the sacramental, and you're talking about the sacramental. The sacramental is when we get a bishop in the church. He accepts Pope Michael, probably most likely the most logical step would be consecrating the Pope, but you can do it without having the Pope consecrated. When the bishop is in the church, he can say a valid Mass, because he has jurisdiction from the Pope, because the Pope is the person who sends him. That's where he gets his authority. And so after you have authority, you can say the Mass, you know, properly. Obviously, there's, you know, Latin and all the rites that go with the church, and after following the rites, you can have the Mass. So as soon as we get a bishop, more or less, when we're going to have Mass. Now, we're not going to have, you know, a really nice, beautiful church right off the bat. But we're going to have essentially what the early Christians had in the first, 300 years was Mass in the homes or in the catacombs. And so we're going to try and, make it most appropriate, what you have. So yeah. That's when we get a bishop, when the sacraments will be restored, because that's when everything will flow.
I don't have any other questions. Is there anything else that you'd like to ask?
That's good. I don't know. I was mainly talking. I wasn't thinking.
anything that maybe you feel is important that we haven't touched on yet?
I just thank God every day I'm a virgin. That's all I say. Because living these times, it's hard. I just seeing people, it's hard. But I thank God every day for that. But other than that, just I keep praying for people, for themselves.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, like we said, we're going to make this public.
Hey, that's fine. Go for it.